Welcome to Sweet and Twisted, a true crime podcast.
I'm Dawn.
I'm Anita. Be advised, there are trigger warnings in every episode. Each week, we will highlight a missing person so we can bring more awareness to their case.
Today, we will be highlighting Christopher Hooks. Christopher Hooks was last seen January 22, 2017 in Hamburg, Arkansas. He left his residence in a 2002 black Toyota pickup truck with fictitious tags. He has a tattoo on his back, Hooks, his last name, and a cross tattoo on his back. He was 5'9", 145 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes. He would now be 49 years old. Please contact Ashley County Sheriff's Office at 870-853-2040. Now on to today's case.
Hey all you fantabulous sassholes, what another glorious Friday. Hope everyone is well. Now let's dive into today's case. Did you know an estimated 40 million people worldwide and 50,000 people in the U.S. are victims of human trafficking? California, Texas, and Florida, with Las Vegas being a hotspot, have the most reported human trafficking cases. Sex trafficking is the second largest black market industry in the country, with drug trafficking being the largest, generating an estimated $99 billion a year. In San Diego County alone, a staggering $810 million is approximately generated a year. Hell, a pimp can average $396,000 a year. It doesn't seem to ever end. The U.S. is ranked one of the worst countries in the world for human trafficking, followed by Mexico and then the Philippines. I'm just flabbergasted by all the evils committed in the world, one atrocity after another. In this episode, I'm going to be sharing several cases pertaining to human trafficking. As a reminder, there are trigger warnings in every episode, as this episode pertains to individuals being kidnapped, tricked, coerced, forced into sexual exploitation, etc. Please be advised. The first case I want to share is about a couple, Wee Lee Pang and Shu Gang Lee, also go by Linda and James, who allegedly exploited undocumented women from China. Pang recruited female Asians to travel to the KC area, booking and purchasing flights, then would go on to transport them from Kansas City International Airport to the massage parlors. They would force the women to work in multiple massage parlors that they owned in Kansas City, Missouri, forcing them to perform sexual acts. The massage parlors were Asian Massage Health Center in Olathe, Kansas, and Oriental Massage in Mission, Kansas. This took place between May 2006 to May 2007. Pang and Lee are Chinese nationals with permanent resident alien status and resided in Overland Park, Kansas City, Missouri. Both Pang and Lee have been indicted. The indictment alleges that the duo, Pang and Lee, aided and abetted each other and others with transporting females in interstate or foreign commerce. The plan was to have the females engage in prostitution inside massage parlors and elsewhere. Allegedly, Pang, Lee, and partners transported at least five females in interstate commerce. In December 2008, Pang pleaded guilty to a two-count indictment in the United States District Court, Western District of Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri. However, on July 20, 2010, a federal arrest warrant was issued for Pang's arrest due to her failing to appear for sentencing. In March 2008, Lee was charged in a four-count indictment by a federal grand jury in the United States District Court, Western District of Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri. A federal arrest warrant was issued the same month for Lee's arrest. Pang and Lee may possibly be traveling together. The next part is about Jason's story. He is a human trafficking survivor from the Philippines. It began in 2008 when Jason was offered a job in the U.S. by a woman his uncle knew. He had worked for this woman before, so he trusted her and took the offer. He took the offer without knowing or asking for details pertaining to the job. He took it all on trust and blind faith. The woman paid a recruiter to arrange for Jason's visa and to train him on what to say to come to the U.S. with a P-1 visa for athletes. Now, a P-1 visa allows its holders to participate in athletic seasons, entertainment events, tours, sports tournaments, and other projects. The recruiter goes on to promise Jason that it would be easy to get a work visa once he arrived. Of course, the recruiter lied. It varies, but the processing time for a U.S. work visa could range from a mere 3 weeks to 4 months. A simplified application could take weeks, but the regular application for work visas takes several months. Once Jason arrived in the U.S., he met up with the same woman who got him the job. He relied on her entirely since he didn't speak English well, nor did he know his rights. Sadly, this is where things turn for the worse. The woman took Jason's passport for safekeeping and told him he owed her $12,000. She claimed he had to work for her for 10 years for reimbursement. You guessed it, the woman became his trafficker. He started to work at an elderly care facility on top of doing construction and gardening. While working off his debt, Jason met Angela. She was another victim of the same BS that Jason was. He and Angela would look out for one another. They worked nonstop, 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. This many hours work supposedly would take 10 years to pay off. What a crock of shit. They were allowed 0 days off, no rest. They had to work all the time with minimal sleep. They weren't provided a room. Hell, not even a bed to lay upon. That left sleeping on the floor, or if they were able to, sleep in a reclining chair in one of their elderly patients' room. They were allowed absolutely zilch. The facility was their prison. They could never leave. Couldn't even talk to anyone. Always on high alert for the risk of being discovered by building officials or the patient's family members. To always be in a constant state of chaos. I don't even think I could even come close to imagining the depths of hell that was endured. For all hours that Jason worked, he was paid a whopping $400 a month, which he sent majority back home, while the rest of what he earned, according to his wretched trafficker, was used to pay off his visa debt. Jason was well aware that the she-devil trafficker was lying, but he still was unaware of his rights, didn't speak English well, and thought he didn't have anywhere else to go. He thought he would be arrested due to his immigration status and due to the fact that the vile, monstrous woman claimed she would deny that he worked for her. She reminded him often that the police could arrest him and there was nothing he could do about it. The only way to keep himself out of jail, according to the trafficker, was to work off his debt. That was to be his life for the next 10 years, not going anywhere, talking to anyone, and not being able to see his family. Thankfully, he only endured this nightmarish hell for 9 months. Still too long, though. Things would change all thanks to a neighbor. The neighbor noticed how many hours Jason and Angela worked with no days off. She took it upon herself to turn it into the FBI. Thank goodness. Angela spoke to the FBI because she believed that they might be able to get help. With support from the FBI and the cover of darkness, Jason and Angela were able to escape their nightmarish trafficker. Jason was provided help with placement into a men's shelter by a service agency. Jason goes on to explain how he never would have come to California had he been given a written contract in his own language outlining his work and the money he would allegedly owe. Jason had said, and I quote, "She said that because she had been the one who brought me to the U.S., she owned me." He also goes on to say, "I wish I had the right information before I was given an offer. I wish I had known my rights before I had come here. Being in the Philippines, given an offer like that, it's like, whoa, I'll take it. But you don't know what's going to happen to you. But you know, our lives in the Philippines, when you hear you can go to the U.S., you just want to come." The next case is about a child sex trafficking survivor, Sarah Jessamy Cruzan. When she was 17 years old in 1995, she was convicted of first-degree murder of her trafficker, George Gilbert Howard. "I don't understand her being punished in any way, shape, or form. Of course, murder generally isn't the answer, but what I'm about to share of her story is completely warranted in my opinion." This girl, well, woman now, had been through so much that started at such a young age and was then coerced into murdering her trafficker or else. Let's start with Sarah's early life. She was born on January 8, 1978, and grew up in Riverside, California with her older sister and her mother. She only met her father on 3 occasions due to him being a heroin addict and serving long prison terms. Out of the 3 times she was around her father, she witnessed him shooting up heroin in the bathroom. Sarah's mother had her own demons as well. She was mentally ill, emotionally unstable, and was addicted to cocaine. The so-called mother physically and mentally abused the girls since infancy. For shit's sake, her mother smacked her so hard across the face that blood splattered from her nose onto a nearby dresser.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's like really freaking hard. Now, that is abuse. CPS opened an investigation in 1989 due to the school noticing bruises on her body and notified the agency. Sadly, it wasn't until 1993 when CPS deemed it unsafe for Sarah to continue living with her mother. There's more, though. Quite sickening that a child had to endure such monstrous acts. She was molested. The earliest age she could recall of this happening was at 5 years old. What kind of man wants to fornicate with a child? Sick, disgusting rat bastards. Karma, I hope, was able to make him pay. Unfortunately, her being molested once wasn't enough. It happened to her time and time again. Almost every man that her mother brought home had to have their time with young Sarah. Get this, her mother did nothing to stop them. Instead, she blamed her daughter and was jealous of her daughter. I'm at such a loss for words. I mean, it's beyond disgusting. There's a special place in hell for individuals like this. But it doesn't end there for poor Sarah. Sarah is constantly exposed to her mother's sex life and even drugs. She was severely depressed, which resulted with her being hospitalized on numerous occasions. By 4th grade, young Sarah started cutting. It only continues to worsen for the poor girl. By age 11, she was hospitalized due to trying to end her life.
Jesus.
Yeah, age 11, wanting to end your life. I mean, that's just... I can't fathom it. Even with all this evidence, the state sends Sarah back home into that hellish nightmare. They send her back home.
Of course they do.
Remember, she wasn't able to escape that wretched place until 1993, when CPS finally deemed it unsafe for her. Sarah began to leave home, though, without permission. But her mother didn't have an ounce of concern. Instead, her mother would assault her and force her out of the home. She met George Gilbert G.G. Howard, also at age 11. He picked her up as she was walking home from school, bribing her with ice cream. He was 20 freaking years older than her at that time. The sick twat then takes her to his home, where he undressed her and then goes on to molest her. He committed a first-degree felony sexual assault. From then on, G.G. Howard would indoctrinate her into the child sex trade. By age 12, Sarah's wonderful mother, yes, I hope you hear the sarcasm dripping from my tone, set her daughter up with a 23-year-old mentor. This mentor would supply Sarah with alcohol and rape her repeatedly over a span of a year. By age 13, Sarah was gang raped by 3 men, and her piss-poor excuse of a mother refused to allow her to press charges. Her mother claimed it would backfire, but she had asked for it anyways.
Oh, God.
Right? Who in the hell would ask to be raped by 3 guys, let alone a 13-year-old child asking for that? On top of this happening, G.G. Howard, 33 at this time, goes on to rape Sarah. Then immediately following, he sexually exploits her. He sold her body in the child sex trade for 3 freaking years. He continuously threatened her and put her in dangerous situations on top of Sarah dealing with the dangers of prostitution. Fast forward to age 15, Sarah survived a fatal car crash but was hospitalized. She is then placed in 5 to 6 foster care homes but always ran away. She would run away and return to G.G. Howard. This went on for about 5 months. If only she would have stayed away from that monster. Sarah attempted to finally escape in November 1993 by going to Ontario with 15-year-old boyfriend Johnny Otis. Of course, it was short-lived all due to Sarah's wretched mother. Her mother threatened to report her kidnap, so Sarah returned to her mother's neighborhood. Sarah's friend, Johnny, had found a place for the two of them to temporarily stay, with his uncle, James Earl Hampton. The uncle, however, was a convicted felon, a drug dealer, and was out on parole. He bragged about murders he committed, waved guns around, and threatened her friend's life. Sarah wanted to borrow money from G.G. Howard to be able to get her own apartment, but James Earl found out her plans and her past and continued with his murderous threats and came up with a plan of his own involving Sarah. His plan that he demands of Sarah, and I quote, "Well, I want you to get Gigi's money, and I want you to shoot him, and if you don't do this, I'm going to kill your mother," end quote. James Earl ordered Sarah on March 9, 1994, to call G.G. Howard to arrange for the two of them to meet. He then forced Sarah, with a pistol, to go with a third party, who would then bring Sarah to meet with G.G. Sarah and G.G. are on their way to a movie theater when she began to receive several pages from James Earl with the instruction 187, meaning murder. Remember when we had pagers and everything, when that was the hot thing? My gosh! Takes you back, doesn't it?
Oh, geez, yeah.
After the numerous pages, Gigi escorts Sarah to the Dynasty Suites Hotel. He favored this location. He brought her here on several occasions to rape her. Sarah called James Earl while Gigi paid for the room and asked to speak to Johnny. Of course, that rat bastard declined her simple request and goes on to threaten Sarah. He said they wouldn't survive if she didn't follow through with his plan, the murder and robbery of G.G. Howard. Still in the hotel room, past midnight, G.G. Howard put on a porno and began to undress and molest thin 16-year-old Sarah. He took out a large sex toy, all the while Sarah, dreading to be raped again, turns to plug the sex toy into the wall, and then BAM! Sarah shot him in the neck, close range. After the shooting, she takes all of his money, which was only $1,500, and the key to his Jaguar XJS, and she was told to do so, but ended up leaving her purse, identification, and shoes behind. From there, she delivers the car and the money to James Earl and is held at gunpoint by him as he makes more demands of her. He instructed her on what to say if she happened to be questioned. You know that dirty rat bastard coerced her and set her up. From there, and again, you know, that was my opinion, but still. From there, he takes her to another residence and ordered her to be locked in a room for days. When he finally brought her to his mother's house, she was arrested. She does say what she was told to say, as James Earl demanded, but she soon confessed to the murder. The convicted felon, James Earl and Johnny, her supposed boyfriend, were never brought to trial. The DA opted to not bring charges against James Earl or Johnny Otis. Sarah was 16 years old, and she had no priors. But the DA didn't want to bring in James Earl, who was a convicted felon. Okay. She was advised by her defense counsel, David Gunn, to take her case to trial. Judge J. Thompson Hanks presided over her case in Riverside County Superior Court. Hell, her testimony only lasted for 2.5 days. You know what's extremely shocking? The jurors weren't aware that George Gilbert G.G. Howard had sexually assaulted and raped Sarah countless of times. Nor were the jurors aware that he also indoctrinated her into the child sex trade.
So did they just, like, leave that information out when they was talking about it?
Oh, I'll get to that. It just keeps on giving. Cherry on top, no expert witness spoke in Sarah's defense. Oh, there's more. Every leading question that the prosecutor asked, Sarah agreed to nearly every one. I mean, oh, it doesn't stop there. They just kept on giving to her. The PO assigned to her case completely overlooked code PC 190.5, which grants court discretion to sentence minors that have been convicted of first-degree murder to 25 to life with the possibility of parole. However, the officer incorrectly stated that the law required the court to sentence Sarah to life without the possibility of parole.
And nobody caught it?
No. I mean, this girl, she has been through hell and back. And I mean, and then with her proceedings so far, what I've just covered, I mean, she was railroaded. I mean, she's...
It sounds like people just realized that she was taken advantage of and they're like, oh, we're going to do it too. We're just going to keep it up and keep it up because she's just going to keep taking whatever anybody
exactly.
dishes out.
You know how I mentioned there were no expert witnesses that spoke in Sarah's defense? Well, had there been, in my opinion, there definitely would have been a different outcome. Two key experts independently concluded that Sarah suffered from the effects of intimate partner battering at the time of the shooting. After Dr. Linda S. Bernard did a thorough evaluation of Sarah and her documents, she concluded that, and I quote, Sarah was suffering from the effects of intimate partner battering in March 1994, and her behaviors and actions were affected, if not controlled, by the years of abuse she endured. By failing to have an expert on intimate partner battering and its effects to explain the many complexities involved in this case, Sarah Cruzan's defense was severely limited. End quote. The other key expert was Dr. Nancy Kaiser Boyd. She concluded, and I quote, Ms. Cruzan clearly suffered the common effects of intimate battering on the night of the shooting. Most young people suffering from intimate partner battering and its effects respond well to therapy and become healthy adults with therapeutic intervention. End quote. Again, if only Sarah would have had expert testimony given during her case, it definitely would have been a completely different outcome of her criminal proceedings. I feel she got severely railroaded.
Definitely.
I mean, it's just sad so far what this girl has endured from such a young age. Well, even really young to, you know, this age. Anyways, on May 10th, 1995, 17-year-old Sarah was sentenced to life in prison plus 4 years consecutive firearm enhancement without the possibility of parole. Fast forward to 2006, the Free Sarah Cruzan was founded by Kim Deanne. In 2009, Sarah was interviewed by Human Rights Watch. In 2010, the Boston artist Earth Say Love started organizing. Also, then-Governor Schwarzenegger commuted Sarah's sentence to 25 years with possibility of parole due to her interview in 2009 and the aid of international supporters. In 2012, Carrie Christie, a San Diego activist, came to organize on the ground in California. In 2011 to 2012, the Global Human Rights Campaign to Free Sarah Cruzan was restructured. Sarah's final appeal was dated July 19, 2012, yet granted several extensions. Carrie Christie, on September 17, 2012, hand-delivered their Change.org petition. It was over 800 pages and more than 25,000 signatures to the Riverside County DA's office. The following month, the campaign skylit Sarah Cruzan on the bridge barricade, which prompted the Tense Reunions episode on Dr. Phil. On January 18, 2013, a settlement removed Sarah's appeal for a new trial but reduced her sentence to 15 years to life plus 4 years, and reduced her sentence to second-degree manslaughter, effectively time-served, making her eligible for a parole hearing. Little less than 5 months later, on June 12, 2013, Sarah Jessamy Cruzan was granted suitable for parole, and the decision was forwarded to Governor Jerry Brown. On October 31, 2013, Sarah was paroled from Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla. She served 19 years.
That makes her... my math ain't mathin'.
36, I think.
Yeah, 30. You said 19 years and she was 17, so yeah, 36.
I still got it sometimes. Look at me go. Whoop, whoop. Okay, anywho. Finally, in July 2022, Governor Gavin Newsom pardoned Sarah Cruzan. She has provided evidence that, with all that she's endured, is living an upright life and has demonstrated her fitness for restoration of civic rights and responsibilities. She has went on to transform her life and dedicated herself to community service. All I've got, I'll keep it short and sweet, about damn time. I mean, for her to finally get her pardon from the time, you know, she was incarcerated to when she was finally pardoned, it took about 28 years.
She should have never went to jail to begin with because I, in my opinion, would say self-defense.
Well, that's why I went and said, I mean, in the beginning, I don't think she should have been charged with murder. I mean, yes, murder generally, you know, isn't the route to go, but there's some circumstances where, I'm sorry, maybe I'll sound like an asshole, but they had it coming. I mean, sick fuck, I mean, the mother is a sick twat, I mean, allowing all this shit, and then to allow all these men to do as they please with the girl, like, for many, many years. It's just the whole, I mean, I'm just trying to think, like, oh my gosh, you know, if I had a daughter, I mean, hell, well, I have my son, and if he had to endure half that, even a fraction of that,
yeah,
I mean, I'd probably go on a killing spree. I mean, there'd just be no two ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah.
The next case is actually currently ongoing. Any ideas? Well, if you guessed Sean P. Diddy Combs, you are correct.
I was completely drawn a blank. I was like, what's going on right now?
I know, well, I haven't been watching too much. It's just when I scrolled Facebook one day, I saw that. I was like, oh, really? And I'm like covering this stuff right now. So I'm like, well, I'll look into this. So
I seen the day around the day that it all happened and came out. And then there was absolutely no more about it. So I forgot all about it.
Right? Well, it's part of a federal sex trafficking investigation led by Homeland Security. Officials raided two of his homes. The raid was carried out a mere 4 months after his ex-girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, accused him of sex trafficking. Helicopters and agents were seen swarming his L.A. mansion, while later on, footage showed his sons Justin and King being detained and waiting outside of the Holmby Hills house. Officials were also at his Miami residence. At the time of the raid, Combs was in Florida. Sean P. Diddy Combs has been hit with several civil lawsuits. When federal agents executed the searches on his properties where guns were found and his phones were seized at an airport before leaving for his trip to the Caribbean, the warrant was issued from the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. Since November, he has been hit with 5 lawsuits, all in New York, where he's accused of sexual assault, sexual trafficking, and engaging in other criminal activity. Combs denies all allegations. According to a familiar source of the matter, at least 5 people have been interviewed regarding allegations of sex trafficking, sexual assault, and solicitation and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms. Now, let's delve in a little to the lawsuits that have been filed against Combs prior to the raid. In November 2023, Cassie Ventura, she's a singer, his former partner, filed a civil suit against him alleging that Combs physically and sexually abused her during the course of their relationship. She alleged that he raped her, beat her in fits of uncontrollable rage, exerted a tight hold over her life, forced her to engage in sex acts that he referred to as freak-offs, which were with other men, which would often be sex workers he paid to travel with them, and Combs would watch. The abuse ranged from 2007 until Cassie left Combs in late 2018. However, the lawsuit was settled a day after she filed for an undisclosed amount of money. Another woman comes forward due to being inspired by Cassie's lawsuit. Joe Dickerson Neal. Dickerson Neal alleges that Combs drugged her, sexually assaulted her and recorded the assault without her knowledge while she was a student back in 1991. On January 3rd, 1991, she was in Harlem on winter break from Syracuse University when she agreed to have dinner with Combs. There is when he intentionally drugged her and then takes her where he was staying. She said she lacked the physical ability or mental capacity to fend Combs off, as he sexually assaulted her. She later found out from a male friend that Combs had filmed the assault and showed it to others. Another woman comes forward, Liza Gardner, and filed a lawsuit accusing Combs of sexually assaulting her when she was a mere 16-year-old girl. She alleges that in either 1990 or 1991 that she and a friend met up with Combs and R&B singer Aaron Hall. It was for an event held by MCA Records in Manhattan. Sheesh. After the event, she was invited back to Hall's apartment with Combs. Both men kept offering her drinks throughout the night. Combs coerced Liza into having sex, leaving her feeling shocked and traumatized. As soon as Combs finished, Hall barged into the room, pinned Liza down, and sexually assaulted her. In December 2023, Jane Doe filed a lawsuit alleging that she was gang raped and sex trafficked by Combs and Harvey Pierre. Pierre was a former longtime president of Combs' record label. Jane Doe alleges the assault happened in 2003 when she was 17 years old and he was 34. She met up with Combs and Pierre at a lounge in Detroit. Combs was able to convince her to travel with them to New York City on a private jet. Before leaving the lounge, supposedly Pierre smoked crack cocaine and forced Jane Doe to perform oral sex on him.
You said she was 17?
Yeah. So he's, you know, at this time, Combs is double her age.
I mean... Yeah. But how could he talk her into going with him? I mean, wouldn't she have to have a parent's permission?
You would think, unless... See, and that's why some of it...
But, I mean, did you say flew?
Yeah. On a private jet.
Oh, private jet. And I guess you wouldn't really have to have permission for a private
jet. But, I mean, if she was, you know, respect her parents' wishes or let them know what was going on. But then again, I mean, maybe she didn't.
I was just thinking how it was possible for him to get her on a plane in the first place, being underage without parents or permission.
Oh, but commercial flight. But, yeah. Okay, I, gotcha.
You know, wasn't thinking private jet. Just not ringing a bell.
Oh, heck, you know. But before leaving the lamp, oh shit, I already said. Once in New York City, she was taken to a studio and Combs, Pierre, and a third defendant gave her excessive amounts of drugs and alcohol. Then the three men go and take turns raping her in the bathroom. She was far too inebriated to have given consent. Once the men had their fill, they left her on the bathroom floor and then flew her back to Michigan. I mean, again, this is all allegedly... You know, them recounting what happened, but all this shit so far is sounds beyond fucked up.
Yeah.
Okay. In February 2024, Little Rod Jones alleged in a federal suit that Combs and his associates engaged in serious illegal activity. Jones worked as a producer on Combs' latest album. He also lived and traveled with Combs from September 2022 to November 2023. Jones also alleged that Combs sexually harassed him during that time, pressured him to engage in sexual acts, forced to acquire sex workers for him, and he witnessed Combs giving drug-laced drinks to people at parties. Jones was required by Combs to record him constantly. In result of that, Jones has obtained hours of footage of Combs and his staff allegedly engaged in criminal conduct. Screenshots of the video clips were submitted in the federal suit. The screenshots were from parties where underage girls and sex workers were present. Jones also alleged that Combs was trying to groom him into having sexual relations with him. Combs sexually harassed and assaulted Jones while he lived at Combs' homes in Florida, L.A., New York, and even on a yacht Combs rented in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Jones goes on to further allege that he and Brendan Paul were asked to travel with drugs and firearms on Combs' behalf. In an amended filing, Jones accused Combs and his son of being involved in a 2022 shooting at a L.A. recording studio. We are now at the time of the raid of March 2024. Leading up to this point, there have been an astounding amount of allegations against Combs. As this case is ongoing, everything that we discuss pertaining to this case is allegedly, and Combs is innocent until proven otherwise. When officials stopped Combs at a Miami airport, Brendan Paul, 25, was arrested. If this name sounds familiar, but you can't recall as to why, Jones named Paul in his federal suit against Combs, claiming of being asked to acquire and distribute drugs and firearms on the behalf of Combs. Supposedly, Combs requires Paul and others that he pays to carry black pouches containing anything from ecstasy, cocaine, ketamine, marijuana, and mushrooms. According to the Miami-Dade police report, Paul was charged with possession of suspected cocaine and suspected marijuana.
I'm a dipshit.
Marijuana candy. The following day, Paul was bonded out. In April 2024, after the raid, Grace O'Marquet alleges in a lawsuit that Christian Combs drugged and sexually assaulted her while she was working on a yacht for Christian's father, Sean Combs. It was a trip chartered at the end of 2022. The lawsuit also named Sean Combs as a defendant. O'Marquet has included evidence transcriptions of audio clips in her lawsuit, which were recorded by a producer of her denying Christian's advances as he gropes her. There have been two clips of audio transcribed from the night of December 28, 2022, but it has yet to be verified as to who was recorded. Sean Combs vehemently denies all allegations. He goes on to state, and I quote, "Let me be clear. I did not do any of the awful things being alleged. I will fight for my name, my family, and for the truth." End quote. That's all I have for now pertaining to this case, but as more unfolds, I know it'll be a topic of discussion. Update! In closing, remember, there are people and organizations ready and willing to help. I know it's easier said than done, but reach out. It's never going to be too late. The National Human Trafficking Hotline is 888-373-7888, and the Suicide and Crisis Hotline is 988. You can call or text that number at any time.
Now, here's today's Did You Hear? It's a high thief.
Like, stoned?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a thief who broke into a house in the neighborhood, and he was high on bath salts. It was around Christmas, so you would think he would take presents and valuables. Nope, he decorated the whole house for Christmas.
Oh my gosh! So he was like the opposite of Grinch.
Yeah, he must have been feeling very festive.
Oh my gosh!
Though it was sweet and kind of cute, he was still charged for theft and burglary. I don't understand the theft part, because he didn't take anything. He gave.
Right? I mean, he broke into their house, but
he decorated it.
Yeah. That. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's funny though. Oh my gosh. He was a.
I wish somebody would break in and decorate my house.
Oh, they can not clean really, my house. Well, I know. Come clean my house.
Oh yeah, I'll take that too.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you join us every Friday for more episodes.
You can find us on Facebook at Sweet and Twisted True Crime, on Instagram at Sweet and Twisted Pod, or you can email us at sweetandtwistedpod@gmail.com.
Until next time,
keep it sweet,
but slightly twisted.
Bye.
Toodles.